Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, dolls. This is Kat, and welcome to Let's Talk About It. So, we have a pretty full show today. I've invited several men that I know from various cities across the country. I wanted to get a mixed review of racism today, and I wanted to get it from a black man's point of view. The media has talked so much about racism, and we all see the headlines. We see the reports, all these things that are going on. You have so many people that get into trouble with what we call driving while black has been an issue. The issue between black men and women and the police. And so many other things, but let me start off by saying racial inequality and the racism in America, it's not a black-white issue. It really isn't. Racism in America is built upon ignorance, is built upon those who have zero tolerance for anyone who is different from themselves. So whether you look different, whether you speak different, whether you pray different religious beliefs, you have different political beliefs, you have a different skin color, you come from a different geographical location. There's so many different reasons, but it's really all built upon ignorance. It's built upon the fact that people are unwilling to accept anything that they consider different from their norm. People are unwilling to open up their minds. They're unwilling to learn about another culture, to learn about another religion, to try to understand. So we have generations of people, sadly enough to say, but we do have generations of people who have this closed mindset that is built upon my way is the only way, my way is the right way, and anything different from this, whether you look different from me, whether you're from somewhere other than where I am from, if you believe different from me, then I'm going to hate you. Where did that start? And more importantly, why do we allow it to continue? Racism in America is at this time at an all-time high, which is sad because we live in a culture that is so diverse. America is and always has been a melting pot. So my question is, if this country is built upon a melting pot mentality, then what makes us think that it's okay to refuse to accept someone different from who we are? When I first moved to Maryland, it was crazy because I come here for a lifestyle change, for something different. And I've always been somebody who is very open. I've welcomed the opportunity to live and embrace and be around many different cultures. And maybe because I was always a curious kid who I like things that are different. I like individuality. And I always strive to learn more. I've always wanted to know about different cultures, different people. If someone did something different from the way that I did it, then I wanted to understand why. What's their rationale? What's their methodology? So I ask questions, and I embrace, and I observe. And I'm also someone who, through career choices, had the opportunity to travel quite a bit. Now, I admit haven't done much traveling abroad because there was so much about America that I hadn't seen yet and hadn't experienced. So I wanted to conquer one country at a time. But I've come across and I've met so many people. I was raised in a household where there really was no such thing as a stranger. Everybody was welcome. Everybody was embraced. And we were raised to accept everyone as an individual. So it's easy for me to go to a strange city and meet people and feel right at home. But the crazy thing is, when I came to Maryland, you know, you're walking down the street or you're walking in a grocery store and you're out and about and you make eye contact with people and you say hello. Well, here, when you do that, they look at you like, why are you speaking to me? You know, they give you this up and down look. And if you smile at somebody and say hello, they think either something's wrong with you or you're about to do something negative. So when did we become such a guarded, such a negative, such a hateful society of people? Being that that was the reception that I got, it made me feel pretty uncomfortable. And it got to the point where I didn't speak to people as often as I normally would if it was somebody that I didn't know. But then I had to realize, why am I changing to be more like a culture that I'm uncomfortable with instead of just being myself, regardless of whether others are comfortable with me or not? And I learned to be myself. I learned to, I'm going to speak. You don't have to speak back, but I do say hello because that's how I was raised and that's how I am. That's how I'm always going to be. So I speak. And I notice when I'm in Arizona, when I'm in California, when I'm in Texas, a number of places, it's not about me speaking to strangers. Strangers speak to me, and I welcome that. I welcome, like, hey, it's not just me. There are people out here that remember the common courtesy. So, you know, it's the little things that we do. It's the little things that we choose to embrace or not to embrace is what keeps this culture of constant hate going. So my question to my listening audience, what are you doing to change the mindset? What are you doing? What is your small part in eradicating racism? So like I said at the onset of the show, I have invited a number of different guests. I know that there were a couple of scheduling conflicts, and, you know, I will catch up with those people on another run. And I had some people that said that they may be able to join a little later in the show, so I'm hoping that we can get to them. If not, we can keep the conversation going. Now, in talking about the racism, we all know right now with the presidential election coming up, we have a candidate who pretty much hates everybody. You know, if you're any shade of brown, he has something negative to say to you. For our brothers and sisters south of the border and have migrated to the U.S. for a number of opportunities, he has something to say to you. And he doesn't like you, basically, is what he's saying. Then you have our people from the Middle East. He doesn't like you either. So I find it quite ironic that a man who continuously marries women who immigrate to the U.S. is totally against immigration. And then again, is it that he's against immigration or he's just immigration is for people who look like him? So anybody who has a little tint to their skin shouldn't be here, in his opinion. It's a sad state of affairs when someone who is running for the office of the President of the United States can so openly and blatantly disrespect and disregard so many people. But then it was worse are these people who embrace him, because here he is publicly saying what they say in private. We all talk about this on social media. We talk about this, you know, in our homes. We talk about this during workroom chats and the water cooler conversations. But what are we doing to change it? One thing that you can do, because some people immediately, when you ask somebody, what are you doing to change it? One of the first things they say is, well, what can I do? I'm just one person. You are. However, each of these people, each of these negative people, each of these ignorant people, each person with a racist point of view is just one person. We don't change a negative atmosphere with more negativity. I would never suggest that. That does not work. You cannot fight hate with hate. The only thing that conquers hate is love and education. So when people, like you had a bunch of people at the situation that you had with Mizzou, and you have people at other universities who are doing everything they can to get their 15 minutes of fame by trying to incite a riot, trying to get a reaction out of the quote-unquote minority sector, then they do things based upon the perceived reaction that they'll get. When people make negative comments, when people post negative things and discriminating posts on social media and things like that, when we react from a negative point of view, how dare you, you've offended me, you know, and calling them names and so forth, you're really giving them what they've prepared for. They know that they can say certain things, and this is the reaction they're going to get. They can call you a certain name, and this is the reaction that they're going to get. So my suggestion is, what would happen if we stopped giving them the reaction that they're prepared for? What would happen if we remain calm? What would happen if we spoke from teaching standpoint, from a loving standpoint? More importantly, what would happen if we ignored them? I don't believe in giving celebrity to people who are destructive. I don't believe in putting their names out there. I don't believe that we should hype them up. Oh, look what they did. We can talk about the victims. We can talk about the crime, but never mention them. Just do a media blackout of them. In my opinion, that would change a lot of things. That would eliminate a lot of the behavior that we're seeing, because they're not getting the reaction that they prepared for. So let's go back to the whole racism thing and what I was saying about racism is not just a black-white issue, because it's not. Racism is not an American versus the world issue, which sadly enough, that's where we've come. I'm seeing so much hate against Muslims right now, and it breaks my heart. You know, the minute you say somebody is from a certain geographic area, they're a Muslim, they're a terrorist. Are you for real? Do you know how many homegrown terrorists we have right here? Do you know how many terrorists we have in the United States? And look at the acts of terrorism. We are not quite, we're halfway through the month of December. In 2015, there have been over 355 mass shootings in the U.S. Mass shooting being four or more people. 355. That is more than one per day. You cannot blame that on one sector of people. You cannot blame that on the Muslims or ISIS or this or that. These are Americans that did this. These are hateful people that did this. So the greatest terrorist that we have in America right now is hate. I was talking to someone recently about, they were talking about Raven Simone made another comment that they didn't care for. She needs to turn in her black card, blah, blah, blah. Why is there so much hate against this girl? Because her opinion varies from yours, and because she has the opinion, so many people are saying that she's not black, she's brainwashed. Your opinion can in no way alter your ethnicity. And how do you judge somebody because they don't think the way that you do, because they're vocal about what they think and how they feel? If you don't have that person's experience, if you have not embraced the things that they have embraced, if you have not experienced, if you have not had the type of diverse experiences that they've had, then how do you know why they have the opinion that they have? Because all of our opinions are based on our experiences. They're based on our life events. Coming to Maryland was the first time that I met people who were telling me they had never been outside of their neighborhood. They were born in a certain neighborhood, they grew up there, and never ventured out. To me, that was the craziest thing I've ever heard of in my life. I couldn't fathom it. I absolutely could not fathom it. And then I had one young man tell me that he had never been off the street that he lives on. I couldn't understand, how is that humanly possible? You have to know, there are streets to the left of you, there are streets in front of yours, there are streets behind you. You have to know that you live in a major city in the U.S., but he honestly had never been off of his street. And we're talking, and I'm just totally flabbergasted, and I'm trying to understand this, and I'm trying to understand, how do you go through life with such a limited point of view? But that's what made me realize, if he's never been outside of a certain range, how do you know what's out there? How do you know what the people are like? How do you know whether or not you fit in? And I think this is the problem that we run into as a people. We go by what we have heard, what someone else told us. We don't verify the information 80% of the time. We take that as gospel and we run with it, and we let that form our opinions, and then we share that opinion with others, and that forms their opinion, when the reality is none of it was really fact. So if you have not stepped outside of your norm, if you have not had a conversation with someone of another culture, if you have not experienced a day in their life, if you have never walked in their shoes, you cannot have an understanding of why they live the way that they live. It's not possible. So hate, and especially the hate that racism is based off of internal opinion and not realistic fact. It's amazing to me how many educated people that I talk to, and they'll say, oh, well, white people hate us. Koreans hate us. This group hates us. Really? And why do you say that? Because I once had a bad experience with a white person. Well, I went into a Korean store and they didn't treat me so well. So you choose to hate an entire race of people, the majority of which you never met, you've never had a conversation with, because of one person, because of one experience. So I question, how many bad experiences have you had with people of your own race? How many bad experiences have you endured? How many people who look just like you treated you with disrespect? How many people who look just like you treated you poorly, spoke badly of you? You embrace them, yet you're comfortable. You don't blame an entire race because of that incident. See, we have to open up our minds and we have to open up our thoughts. This whole thing is not going to change itself, and it's not someone else's responsibility to make the change. It all starts with us. It starts with each one, teach one. And yes, I am my brother's keeper. We have to teach. We have to teach our children. We have to be willing to learn ourselves. We have to teach those who came before us. It's brainwashing. If you talk to someone who is a white supremacist, they're brainwashed. They have the beliefs because this is what they've always been taught. This is what they've always heard. And you can't say, well, they see a lot of negativity on TV. Yeah, they do see a lot of negativity on TV. We all do. Of all cultures. But we see a lot of positive things, too. So it's what you choose to focus on. That's your reality. We can't focus on the negativity and expect positive results. We have to change. I say time and time again, if you change your thoughts, you'll change your life. What can you do today to become more accepting? What can you do to open the door of inclusion? If you want to be included, then you have to learn how to include. If you want to be respected, then you have to learn how to give respect. In the face of adversity, you have to give respect. Racism that I've experienced in my own lifetime, sadly enough, the majority of which didn't come from other cultures. It came from within. And I think that hurts more than anything, because you're like, wow, where do I fit in? Where do I belong? Fortunately, I was raised by people who taught me how to stand on my own beliefs, stand on own understandings, to ask questions, to dig deeper, to not accept what is told to me, to verify the facts. So I'm one who embraces life from a point of positivity and a point of love. In doing that, it's not always received the way I intended, but I'm not responsible for how someone else takes what I give. I'm responsible for my own thoughts and actions. I use the term loosely, but it's funny how many times I have been told that you live in a fantasy world. If you think everybody can get along, if you think people can be colorblind, you live in a fantasy world. No. To that, I normally say, if you don't believe in colorblindness, if you don't believe that everyone can get along, you live in a fantasy world, because that's actually the way the world was designed. We were designed to get along. The race labeling is something that came along later in life. That's not something that was always there. So there really is, and I stand on this and no one can convince me otherwise, there really is only one race of people, and that's the human race. And just like in any culture, whether you're Black, whether you're Latino, whether you're Asian, whether you're Caucasian, there's a variation. You have hundreds and hundreds of variations. So there is no standard. There are no minorities and majorities. Those are all power plays. We have to put down the labels. We have to put down the racial divide. We have to put down the hatred. And it's really to make the changes that we need. It's not about making a choice to fight. It's about making a choice to love. It's about making a choice to let down our guard. So, I finally have somebody on. Hey, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. I was listening to what you were saying about the human race, and I've been doing some research on that for many years, and you're very much onto something. I've had a lot of opposition in bringing forth the research about that because, I found something very interesting when I look at humans in general. Scientifically, the theory of evolution, as we see, everything does evolve. But just from what I've seen scientifically, it does not evolve in the way that they have written in the textbooks and in the universities and the planetarium here in New York. I'm right here by New York City. It is meant to separate us. The from what I found from the 1800s, they created races and categories to try to make one human being seem more advanced than the other. And when I looked at it very deep, I started to see that there was really, you have to have some sort of system of categorization, because then it gets too broad. Because when you look at people, you say, man, there's some dramatically different looking people. Bruce Lee had a good saying. He said, look, they go, what do you consider yourself, like Chinese or North American? And he goes, I consider myself human. He goes, because, we're all on this planet. It just so happens we look different. So a lot of people know it, but there's a model built, the Darwinistic model, which is, there's some energy once you write and print and put these things in that just has some type of spell that it casts over the minds of the people who allow it to be casted over by them. And we see them believe it just the way we see people believe what's in other books, especially religious books. Neither one of them are truth. We have to look for the truth. So I'm saying, look, we really, honestly, if humans are honest with themselves, what I've seen being a scientist for over 15 years, is we don't know where we come from. We definitely do not come from the direct lineage of the ape, according to the real evidence. There's just not enough fossils. You know, people don't understand when I explain to them, I say, go look it up. There is not one single chimpanzee fossil in the world, in any museum. Hmm. Yeah.
And that is something that I've never believed. I've never believed that we evolved from apes. And you said something that I say time and time again, and it gets dismissed. What is written in books, what is taught in universities, this is theory. This is someone's opinion. This is someone's idea. They put it in text, and people read it and believe it. You accept what you're told without doing the research. Do the research. We don't have to accept what is handed to us. Do the research. Dig deeper. Ask for more information. And I don't know why it is that we do that. You know, my grandmother used to say, regardless of the color of your skin, when you're cut, you bleed red. That means we're all the same. We're all the same.
Well, this is what I found that is hard for everyone to really accept. Is that we're similar, but we are not the same. And when I wrote about this in papers, people were stunned when I said, look, when you cut us, we bleed red, but that red blood is not interchangeable. Between some humans, it is, and between others, it is not. It is deadly if you get a transfusion from that. This is why we have to understand blood types, and it's very important. But the uncomfortable thing, the thing that made people very uncomfortable during the lecture was when I stated that it proves to us the fact that you can have a person with highly melanated skin, which would be considered somebody from Africa, India, or Aboriginal Australia, with the same blood type as certain people from Northern Europe and China and North American, you know, a Native American the people here of different, which was dramatically different, you know, different types of people. Mm-hmm. You cannot classify these people as one type of people. But the thing is, it showed me scientifically proof, no belief involved, just fact, that the difference, there is something underneath our skin, the blood, the tissue compatibilities that connect us to each other, that go beyond the skin color. And it's uncomfortable for people because we've been brought up in this world, which is like an institutionalized racism and a caste system. I call it the invisible caste system, where you see the lightest, blondest people, the people most, you know, less of melanin at the top, and the people with the not just the darkest melanin, but with dark melanin and curly hair. So, you know, you look at this and you say, wow. But to see that this one here that you think looks totally different and is of a different race, that his or her blood is compatible with this totally different one that is what somebody would call white, but that same person doesn't have a compatible blood with the white person that looks just like him because he's A positive, the other one's B positive. So this is an uncomfortable truth that people really like kind of pushed away on. Because I said, look, this is serious stuff, and that our existence as far as human beings is really pointing toward a non-terrestrial direction. You know, and I have to say that carefully because I don't want to fall into the category of the people that are pretty delusional and not really as credible because they don't – you know, you see that they're just, they look at it more in a fantasy type of way. I saw a UFO or this and that with no type of credibility. If you ask them, okay, well, by what star? And the person might not know even basic astronomy or something, and then the story falls apart. So anybody on science that would be considered fringe, which is the edges and really the breakthrough, the cutting edge of really understanding and comprehending this thing we call existence that Western science cannot explain or Eastern science can't explain either. You know, they were at least open, just like the Native Americans, to say, look, it's a great mystery, and you have to learn to live with the mystery. So this shocking, provoking truth really makes people uncomfortable, but, you know, it's the truth. It's not what I'm saying. It's not my opinion. This is scientific fact. You know it for yourself as well. People have different blood types, and these people with different mm-hmm. blood types, not only, you know, sometimes they don't look alike. They come from what science would say is a different race. So we destroy that notion by saying, wait a minute, what do you mean a different race? These two people have compatible blood. So if we were going to categorize it like that, it should be called like a blood race. And within that blood race, you might find, you know, a very diverse amount of people that look different. You know, you would think it's people that look all the same, or all these people that have this color skin. But in reality, in actuality, which a lot of people have a problem with accepting, it is not. It's very puzzling when you think about it, because it kind of shows you that, wow, this look that we got on the outside is a total facsimile.
I never thought about it, and thank you for that information. I never thought about it from the perspective of blood typing. I look at myself, and my son and I have the same blood type. I'm O negative. I can take blood from my son, but blood from my daughter would kill me.
That is something that is not really looked into, and it's an astonishing, amazing fact that's so revolutionary that we should be straightforward into that science to say, wait a minute, why is it that a mother's child will come out with what factors made that happen? Where does it come from? Now that's science. That's not the repetitive prison system that they call school in all of these countries, mm-hmm. you know, which of course puts us in this state, because there's really no one to blame for it but ourselves, you know, until we start acting and behaving really like mature adults, which we really do not see. That's the biggest deficiency, is the deficiency of mature adults. When we look at somebody, and, you know, I'm not saying that there isn't spiritual and other non-corporeal things in the universe or in existence, but when you look at people that are very religious and you look at people that are very scientific as well, it becomes a cult, and it hinders and retards humanity. It winds it backwards, it warps it, it mutates it, it molests it, it perverts it. And what do we see when we look at people? Molested, perverted excuses. You know, and it's not them, because, again, we're taught to say it's really their behavior. Because if it's them, we're really throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It's their behavior, our behavior. So in this thing we call existence, you know, this one little clue, the other ones that I found were so shocking that people really shut their eyes and their mind to it, because, you know, just to see that, hey, blood type connects us much more than skin type. A lot of people don't like that because of their prejudices and their biases and their bigotry. You know, is just the truth that people have a problem with accepting. But when the bottom line comes in and you need that blood, I saw one person made a really good poster. It had four packets of blood, and it said, choose the white blood or choose the black blood. You know, it depends on your kid's life. You got to choose one of these, you know. When it shows you just how retarded, how backwards, how messed up it is when you think of things in a racist type of way or a race-based type of thing.
And that goes back to what I was saying. bigotry is learned. It's taught. It's ingrained into us. As children, we come into this world with an innocent mind, and it's a dry sponge waiting to be filled. But it's the adults in our lives and it's the environment that we grow up in that teaches us all these negative habits, these ways of being unwilling to embrace anything that's different or what we view as abnormal. I know that I've always been a very artistic person, so I think with an artistic mind, I've always been extremely curious. I embrace what's different. I want to learn more. I want to understand. My father had a saying that you don't know how much you don't know until you learn something you didn't know. I believe that we should learn. We should be in a state of learning until the moment we die. There's always something new to learn. There's always a new experience to be had. But we pigeonhole ourselves. We pigeonhole ourselves into believing this is who I am. This is who you are. This is right. This is wrong. And that's the reason our culture is in the state that it's in right now. Put down the walls, tear down the labels, and let's go back to being curious. Let's go back to learning. Let's go back to embracing something new and different. Not only will you find out about other cultures, but you'd be amazed at how much you find out about yourself. How can you say you don't like something if you've never experienced it? How can you say that these are my limits if you've never tested your boundaries? And this is where the change that we need to really get things to where they should be, it comes from testing those boundaries. It comes from putting away those old mindsets. So many people, we talk about, well, blacks in America were once slaves. You know what? We all know that. But how long will we continue to enslave ourselves to a slave mentality when that era is bygone?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay, go ahead.
The way you said it was good. The first part, when you say, you know, the slaves, and then you say we're enslaved, that really is something that we need to distinguish, because we of many different types of people from backgrounds, because, you know, not just people from Africa, but there were white slaves, you know, there were Native American slaves, there were Chinese slaves, you know, nicely called indentured servants. But, you know, when we start to be real and not living in Fantasy Island, we start to say, yeah. But I think the correct term that empowers everyone more is to say that those are prisoners. Those are people that were prisoner. And it's funny that you brought that up, because I was writing some definitions and some stuff today to say the real thing that really helps a person is to say, okay, look, what is your definition of a slave? Because, you know, the real definition of a slave, a lot of people have a hard time accepting. Somebody might say, when, you know, well, you're held at gunpoint, you know, and forced to do work. Well, really, that's being a prisoner. That's being enslaved. But you're not really a slave, because, you know, ancestry goes back and you have ancestors that were not slaves. So you can't say that you were slaves. The definition that I came across that was probably the most real definition of a slave is a slave is a person who waits for someone else to come and free them. So that is about the most correct definition. So when you see people that wait for somebody else to come free them, that is the epitome of a slave. And what do we see that's been conditioned into people? Wait for Jesus, wait for this, wait for that, wait for someone else, but don't do it yourself. Don't teach your children, send them to school. Don't, always have somebody else do something that you should do so you have time to do something senseless or mindless, which state that we see of the majority of mindless, like zombies, like people walking dead. You know, and this is because they're not, they're, like we were saying, you learn until the day, you know, you pass into the next world, but if you're not learning, you're dead. You're literally dead already, because that's how, you know, it's like a way of keeping alive. And what do we see? A lot of people walking around the walking dead. And mm-hmm. like a lot of these producers, I noticed, movie producers, I was analyzing media years ago, I'm still analyzing it today in depth to a point, you know, because it's clearly a form of mental control. And when you look at, like I explained to somebody, I said, look, in the 90s, you could not have someone like Donald Trump come out and say what he said, because it would have been considered political suicide. His campaign would have been destroyed. It would have been a joke. I said, to see someone like that being able to parade around and do what they're doing today on vast amounts of different media shows you how terrible the climate has become. When we analyze these things, this is the only way we're really going to go forward. So it's like you're saying, yeah, we should learn until the day we die. Now, when you look at it, you say, well, how do I convince this person that he falls into a slave-like mentality? And any time that we find ourselves waiting for someone else to do something for us, we go right back into being a slave. Anytime we decide to make that change for ourselves, we're free at that point. So if you look at it, look at people that have their own businesses compared to people mm-hmm. who look for work. Because I've always been a person that, you know, it's struggling, but I look for work. You know, I do many different types of work, from carpentry to, you know, many other things, to academic work that I get paid for. But the thing is, it's, no, I don't want you to pay me $500, $1,500, whatever it is, to a week. I would rather work and produce something, and you pay me according to my skill. And this is slowly being weaned out, we see, with freelancers and also with small mom-and-pop type businesses. Because those were people that, you know, you would get unique things at different stores. You would get different, a vast majority of different vegetables across the country. Now we have these massive, you know, Walmarts and food stores. If you ever look in a Walmart, Walmart is a very good place to do research, and by just standing and observing the people that shop there and how people perceive you there. It's creepy to me, because one or two times I had to get like something like bleach or something. And I must admit, yeah, when you don't really have the right amount of finances, you will go for the cheapest deal. So I remember running in there one time and getting bleach. And as I noticed everybody, it was like I was in a horror movie or something, or some type of Twilight Zone. And I saw how I walked around, and I said, wow, they don't want you to leave this store. They have the junk vendor cardboard box diet, which the majority of America loves. Furniture, television, video games, clothing, stuff for pets, you know, a little bit of outdoor stuff. And this is like a model for the what did I call it? The domesticated citizen. I need a word like for an ultra domesticated, because when you look at a person that sits down and watches TV and eats junk food and just grows, like, you know, sometimes they call it a couch potato or whatever, but just forsakes the natural body that was given to them. That if you look at the shape of a natural body in shape, and I'm not saying you have to be a bodybuilder or anything, just someone who walks and does exercise, like uses the body, like keeps it in shape. It's a work of art. No matter if it's big, if it's slim, if it's whatever, everybody has their own beauty to them. But when that body, like these foods, when it starts getting out of shape and, well, really more polluted, out of shape isn't even the right word. It's more polluted and just, you know, it gets to where the person not only gets physical problems, but you get mental problems. And the worst part of that is the food is, it's not food, it's drug food, it's addictive. Because if you look at, I told somebody years ago, I said, look at the child having the fit in the supermarket. I said, you know, that's not a fit, really. I said, that's a drug withdrawal symptom. But children haven't been taught to fake and lie about their addictions like we have. So they're going to be real. And you're going to have to beat them right there in the supermarket, which you will because most parents are animals anyway. And beating a child does the same thing for teaching that child as beating the wife does for the relationship. So nobody's really going to convince me that that's right. You know, it's like, okay, so
it's
hitting your
control.
Wife. Yeah, you know. Now, there are times where you might have to be firm. But when you look at this child flipping out for this substance that the parent will deny that they got them hooked on it. Yeah, you bought it first. You started giving them those Fruit Loops and stuff, and you didn't know it was a drug. And now when he or she is acting like the drug addict that the drug was meant to make you act like because you're putting the drug in the face and saying, no, you can't have it, what do you expect the kid to act like? You know, so when we, again, it goes back to it's the lack of mature adults because a really mature adult is going to see that. Most adults are just trying to get the shopping done with to shut the kids up and get home so they can indulge in something selfish, whether it be a television show or something else. But definitely not
but
sitting
you,
there. Huh? Yeah.
But you talked about being indentured. You talked about slavery. And we seem to transform through various types of slavery, and it is, we are self-indentured. One of the biggest forms of slavery that we have today, and especially here in the U.S., is financial slavery. They talk about credit ratings. We talk about credit scores. You have to be at a certain level. Excuse me. You want to make sure that you get credit and that you use the credit in order to reach a certain score in order to be considered a good person so that we will want to give you more credit.
Mm-hmm.
But that
mm-hmm.
is a form of slavery. Online,
cool.
That is a form of slavery.
Yeah, well, there's a saying, the debtor is like a dog with the creditor's name on his collar. It's an old self-empowerment, become a millionaire, you know, be your own path type of lecture from decades ago. But it has a truth to it. And this is the reason for this is we are not taught how important a penny and 3 cents and 5 cents is. I've thrown away so much money in my lifetime, I don't even like to think about it because and laugh at the person who cuts the coupon and stuff like that. Even though, you know, it gets deep with it, you know, because even the coupon stuff you don't want. The whole thing is this to say the understanding of currency is extremely important. That math, to know math for things like that, that's what it's need to know for. But we're taught math in a way that we don't want to use it, really. It still comes out, and this is why you see young men that become entrepreneurs, whether it's in commercial goods or drugs. They're still using math. They know you buy something, you flip it, you double your money. Now, this type of empowerment, this is what they don't want people to have, so they get you to say, hey, you know, you can get this now, again, accepting the free lunch, accepting the privilege. When you don't deserve something, you shouldn't take it just because it's given to you, because it weakens you, it spoils you. That's how you get that term spoiled rotten. You know, when you spoil a person can be changed. When you're spoiled rotten, you're done. That's it. You got to throw the person, you throw it away. It's spoiled rotten. And we see a lot of people are spoiled rotten. When you look at the state of the police state we live in, oh, my, it's off the Richter scale. you try to talk to people about, what cracks me up is you see a lot of people with what is a reality of white privilege that, you know, a lot of people will deny only because they're like, it's the spoiled child reaction. I say, you've had a privilege that you don't deserve, you did not earn, and it's just like a kid getting something that he did not deserve and did not earn, and you try to take it away, you're going to get a reaction. And that's what we see when mm-hmm. people say, everybody gets offended now. No, everybody doesn't get offended now. This stuff has been bothering us for decades, and we're getting more communication now, and you're acting like a spoiled child because your white privilege is being revoked. It's being blockaded, and to make it worse, which is better, which I find hilarious, is that I never thought in my lifetime I would ever see a black man in the presidency. Not to say that I support, mm-hmm. you know, because I still know he's a puppet of the empire, but the fact is just the fact that he pisses off the racist, that I'm happy with, to say yes. And he has done more than, you know, he's also done not so good things, but he's, you know, you've seen stuff that he's done. I never thought I'd see cannabis legal in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, these guys, and I said, look at this. You know, yeah, we're still going to war, which is messed up. They destroyed, you know, Gaddafi and all of these other guys. You know, it's changing. You know, I you know, honestly, I really can't even say if it's for the better, even though we do have those changes, because look at the Trump scenario. For that man to be able to come out and say that publicly and not have that political campaign destroyed by that, which we know would have been destroyed in the 90s if he said that, like when Clinton and them were running and all of that, you had to totally stay with the illusion. You couldn't come out and just say something like that. You could be a racist, which most presidents or all presidents probably were, but you couldn't openly say it. Now you got a guy
not even as far back as the 90s, and not only political careers, but do you remember Mel Brooks was one of the best action heroes that we have seen in a long time. I mean, you had Mad Max, you had I can't even think of the other series he did with Danny Glover, but he was an icon, he was a hero. And then he made a comment, anti-Semitic comment about Jews.
Oh, you mean
now,
Mel
all of a sudden,
Gibson? Mel Gibson,
mm-hmm.
okay.
Mel Gibson, I'm sorry.
He also made one
now,
about
now all
Blackie.
Of a sudden his career is shut down. So how did we go from that to I can say whatever I want by any particular group of people that I have hatred towards and not only be okay, but you're championed because of it? When did we get so twisted? When did we lose our values?
I think that we never have. They were waiting.
You know,
there.
This is why I'm talking about the issue of racism, and I make it very clear. And you know, for those of you who joined at the beginning of this broadcast, I say it again: racism is not a black-white issue. It is not a black-white issue. There is intercultural racism, and there is intercultural racism.
Mm-hmm.
We have to put down the labels. We have to be inclusive if we want to be included. There's no
yeah.
other way around it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to embrace those who we claim are not embracing us.
That is part of it. I mean, people, it's hard to do, well, like when we spoke at the beginning when I called, about with having the Darwinistic model and the religious model. Because, I mean, God's a bigot, too, when you go into certain religions, mostly all, you know, and a tyrant and a woman hater. So it's like, you know, how can we have peace on earth when people worship a tyrant in heaven? So we must address those issues, and we must address the fact that we need to categorize people because we are dramatically different looking and we do have differences. Medically, that's a fact. So what I found is you basically have five basic groups of people on the planet. And this is, you know, these groups are interchangeable by blood, of course, but this is the outer look. You have Africans, which we have a distinct look for that. We have Indians, which we have a distinct look for that. There's really three types of black people, which would be considered black because the color isn't a person. It's just another label. But really melanated would be the proper term. So three types of really deeply melanated people would be from Africa, India, and Australia. Now, these are dramatically mm-hmm. different people. You know, you'll have some people that will try to play the bias on the black side and say, oh, no, it all comes from Africa. No, it doesn't. Because Indian people with straight hair that are black-skinned, blacker than, you know, the darkest black, that, you know, also only the culture, one of the few cultures left that have a black god, you know, Kali and Krishna, those are black. Those are melanated people. And then you also have lighter melanated people, less melanated people there as well. Mm-hmm. Africa, you have the same thing. You have melanated people. The biggest difference is the hair texture and to some extent body type on certain, like you'll see differences in that because Africa is a vast continent and so is, you know, India is part of Asia. But now look at the way the system, and this is why we have to reclassify this, they classify that, and then the third type, of course, is the Aboriginal from Australia, which I think they call the Kufi, which Aboriginals, like, they don't like that term. And you see, we're taught to think this, and this is the pursuit of knowledge, to say, okay, so they have more of a wavy hair, if you notice. And then when you go to, like, Papua New Guinea and more to those islands, you'll see, again, more melanated people that actually have a tighter type of curled hair that goes back to like an African type of hair. But the funny thing is about those people in Polynesia is they mostly, 90% of them have blonde hair with melanated skin. Mm-hmm. Aboriginals, 90% of Aboriginals are born with blonde hair. So when I started doing the human genetic research, that was a real amazing thing I found, because some people will try to attribute it to mixing or something, but like that's not what it is. It's like this is a gene where it's like, wow, I think something else influenced humans with it. It really points toward that.
But how do you explain, and this is a group of people that you rarely hear about, how do you explain the Moors? Because you had the Moorish people from Turkey, you had the Moorish people from Spain.
Yeah, Moors, you can't see. That's like saying a Moor is really not the correct term for it, because if you have it, it's like saying the Jewish is a person. Judaism is a religion. Mm-hmm. You see, so you'll have Russian Jews and you'll have Jews from Ireland. You know, and so the same thing with Moors, you have to remember that goes back way before that. So like with the Moorish generals that took over the bottom of Europe for seven centuries or so, a lot of those were African slaves that were considered Moors because those were their masters. So when you look deep into that, I mean, the Arab slave trade, if you look at that slave trade and you study it, was 10 times more horrendous than the European slave trade. They mm-hmm. did what the Europeans are saying, damn, we should have followed the Arabs, because they killed slaves after they were done with them. They castrated them when they were born. They didn't want them breeding. When you look at the race, the white racist in America, they're saying that thing, we should have killed these bastards. Look at them. And that's the way we get treated in society. So we start to look at this going back, and we say, God damn, everybody's trying to do this to Africans. And Indians as well. Indians will try to, oh, no, you were slaves as well. Because the Hindu Kush Mountains, Kush is slaughter. That was the Hindu slaughter mountains, because that's how many of them died on the dragging from India all the way to Arabia to be slaves. Mm-hmm. And this is why you have Arabs that look like Indians, but they'll say, oh, no, they look like Arab. No, they don't. But Indians, you won't find the nose, the bent nose, like the beak, the hooked nose that you see in a lot of Arabs. In Indians, you'll actually see a different type of nose. You'll actually see either a pudgy or a straighter nose or a straight pudgy nose. But you don't. You'll see that the hook comes from that Middle Asia type of a passage there. So when we say what happened before that, you see, it had me on a mission to study the truth. And it brought me to find out now I mean, history is being rewritten that they're trying to hide, because in Turkey they found underneath sand a stone circle, which is like a small village with statues. I think it's 13,500 years old, Göbekli Tepe. That pushes back anything from Africa, Sumeria, Iraq, you know, and all these other places that they said 6,000 years. No, this is 13,500. They found underwater monuments in Japan. I remember studying that in the mid-90s. They're still trying to say that it wasn't monuments, and they are. The problem is with that, mm-hmm. This is when the sea level was that low, was 14,000 years ago. Funny enough, that's kind of close to that 13,500 date in Turkey. Now, this next discovery that came off the western coast of India by Mohenjo-daro is 32,000 years old under 100 feet of water. That is the size of two Manhattan. And they're saying that this seems to be the legendary city of Dvarka that they said Lord Krishna comes from, that those people worship, the dark one, Krishna, which is so dark they depicted him as blue in the pictures. And that's underwater. You know, they've gotten even artifacts. So when you look at that, you say, whoa. Once again, it reminds us we really don't know where we come from. And, you know, you see that, yeah, we seem to be definitely one type, one group of human beings. We're really one human family. That's what I call it, because race implies the Darwinistic struggle. We're in a race against each other. That term alone separates us. So you're spot on with we have to get rid of that. But we must classify the humans into five basic groups or categories instead of classify. It's a better word. We have Africans, we have Indians, we have Orientals, and we have Europeans. And those are very broad five groups, because not all Indians look the same, not all Africans look the same, and definitely not all Orientals or Europeans as well. You see the most dramatic difference in hair colors in what would be termed Europeans, but that term in itself is false. It started to show me that with the blood type, not only with the blood type, but with the phenotype, with the physicality of a person, you know, you see someone with curly hair and dark skin. They look more like a person that has curly hair and light skin. You'll see people with curly hair, light skin, pudgy noses, freckles from Ireland. And then if you look at somebody, you'll see a lot of red-boned African people as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of had me with the link, with the Aboriginal link in Australia, saying, well, look at that. You got dark people, black people here with straight blonde hair, wavy blonde hair. Then you got light people with straight wavy blonde hair. They seem to be more connected. But they classify us by skin color to keep us at each other's throats and to give this false sense of separation. But it's really not, it's a false sense of separation in the type of separation, because there is a difference and a difference between people, but it doesn't go really as much according to skin color. And when we look at that alone,
it's funny how people always say that anyone who has color, anyone who has more melanin in their skin originated from Africa, and that is so not true. The color of your skin and certain features, whether it's the shape of your eyes, whether it's the texture of your hair, it has more to do with the climate and where you are from. This is what people don't get. You know, you talk about even skin texture. When you look at people who are from a more dry desert type area, their skin is more leathery, right? And has like a bronze overcast to it.
Mm-hmm.
Even here in the U.S., people who live in the southwestern states, their skin texture is a lot different from someone who is in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into people from, if you look at Latinos from any of the many countries of South America, totally different from the Spaniards when you get to Europe. So not everyone who is of color is from Africa. It's, you know, the
yeah,
way
you're
the
right.
history books are written, it makes it seem that everyone started off in Africa to every other point in the world.
Well, that theory allows the world to treat Africans like subhumans. Because if you
mm-hmm.
really look into it, and I tell a lot of brothers, I said, look, you just took the free lunch, man. You can't take that. Yeah, you're the original man, the closest to that ape. And that's why they treat you like an ape. And that's exactly what, think about Northern Africa. What do they call it? Northern Africa, Egypt and all that stuff. And then they say, then there's sub-Saharan Africans. That word, subhuman. What is India considered? India is on the same continent of Asia as everyone else, just like Europe
mm-hmm.
is, which really is Western Asia. But they call it the subcontinent of India. Again, trying to diminish those people, the darker people. So there is an underwritten, a hidden, if someone wants to say, invisible conspiracy, a reality, not a conspiracy theory, a conspiratorial reality, that that there is something that is trying to really destroy melanated people, you know, not just African melanated. And you're right, just because you have melanin, you are not from Africa, and it does not go back there. I mean, now that they found cities and these pioneering archaeologists that are not mainstream are bringing this to light, and, you know, I've been to sites and, you know, studied stuff, have tons of pictures from museums. You know, this is blowing the door open with that, oh, we come from Africa and all of this. They give the person that little bit of leniency, and the person says, oh, yeah, we're the original people. And that also means primary. So you're the outdated model, which makes no
mm-hmm.
sense when you look at it. Because if you look at the darker-skinned person, that's actually, and, you know, it's not to say nothing against lighter-skinned person, but as far as sunlight, that person has an advantage. Because they're not going to burn in the sun. They're going to be able to endure more of that. And this is where
mm-hmm.
I started to see that human origins, the planet just isn't big enough to have this much diversity on it. It's not going to produce somebody that is devoid of melanin that's going to burn. Because even if you're in the North Pole and your face is exposed to the sun, you're going to get a burn if you don't have melanin. You know, you see Eskimos have a slight tan. Now, that evolution over time, I think, is coming from, because if you look at all of what they would call Native Americans, those people really have an Asian look to them. If you look at
mm-hmm.
the people from Central America, they look like melanated Chinese people. None of the men are really over 5'9 or 5'10. You don't see 6-foot men that come from Central America a lot, from Guatemala and Costa Rica and Nicaragua and stuff like that. You'll see it more as you go down into South America again. So that's a very good, like marker to say, wow, look at that. Yeah, you're right. If you look at Chinese population on the whole as well, you're not going to find a lot of 6-foot men. But if you
mm-hmm.
look at what would be called European, certain Europeans, not all of them are the same, just the way Africans aren't, because you'll see 6-foot Europeans, but you're not going to see a lot of 6-foot Irish people. Irish people and Celtic and, you know, certain parts of Spain that connects to that, or, you know, like across the shore, are more like a stocky 5'8", 5'9", type of build of person. And then as you get into Spain more, you'll see a taller 6-foot type of man, just like you'll see in the Northern African, the Egyptians. But then also you have the pygmy tribe, where no man reaches 5 foot tall. Diversity of humans, as crazy as it may sound, it goes beyond this planet. It directly shows toward that. It shows that if we didn't directly evolve from an ape, but it seems like there has been some type of genetic manipulation with the human being, because you do see some type of primate type of stuff in us. When you look at primates and you look at humans, you say, well, there is a similarity. You know, we have similar bodies. You know, we're not quadrupeds, you know, we're both able to walk on 2 feet. You know, they can walk more on 4 feet. It's a mystery. It is a mystery. And you're right. The African out of Africa theory is really is it's a facsimile. It's a facsimile. And it's not to take anything away from African people. It's just to say, how do you expect the same person that's enslaving the world to tell you the truth, you know, about where you come from? And it just, it shows that from so many hundreds of years, possibly, that I tell a lot of people that you got to be careful you don't mimic the behavior of the people that enslaved you. And that's what we see in a lot of people of color today. Because they will institutionalize, like you said, the racism within their cultures. You look at the Indian, the Chinese, the, you know, even with Africans, you know, they'll try that light skin, dark thing, dark skin. Yeah, they made the movie about it years ago, School Days, and you know, a lot of other stuff. So we're mimicking behavior, and not to blame anybody and say that, oh, it comes from Europeans, because, you know, they were enslaved as well, you know, during the Moorish stuff. So something has casted this behavior upon us. And if you read the religious books, it clearly instructs you how to, you know, you should be a slave master. You know, if you ain't like me, I either got to kill you or convert you. You know, and that goes for every religious book. Nobody's exempt from that. When we start exempting people, then we get back into the, you know, the garbage. If you read those books, you know, and it's not, I'm not saying, and this is what people will misinterpret, I'm not saying religious people are bad. I'm saying if you follow the books, it breeds immorality. It teaches you to do the crime and then ask for forgiveness. I can do anything I want as long as I take this person as my, you know, savior or I convert. It breeds immorality.
Actually, it really doesn't. And religious books, every other book, is written by man. And man is going to put his belief and his spin, and he's going to write according to his own understanding. That does not mean that it is totally factual, nor does it mean that it is devoid of fact.
Let's reinterpret what you just said. You said it's written by man. Now, honestly, and I would love to agree with that. I would really like to say that, but I know that I got a feeling saying, man, I know I'm not searching enough. Because we're really not sure, and I'm not saying it was written by some spiritual being or something, but what if it was that we were genetically manipulated? What if it was something the way we can create stuff now, the way we can breed animals and pens, and they look at us as their mothers or fathers, especially when the parent is killed, you know, with the duck experiments and stuff like that, and the kittens or the ducklings or the chicks bond to you like the parent. You know, because that's a very, we see this. What if, because when we read these books, it really points toward, I tell somebody, oh, so you believe in Jesus, so you believe in extraterrestrials, and they get mad at me. And I say, well, he's not of this earth. I said, if something is not of the terrestrial earth, it is extraterrestrial. And that's what, well, I didn't get we went on a different subject earlier, that I was going to say, when we look at the really religious person, they have a mental disease. I'm not saying they're a bad person again. I'm saying this person has mentally been infected and they have become a slave mentally by saying, I'm not going to do anything. I'll see the worst thing happen and Jesus is going to come or I'm going to pray. Now, I'm not saying that prayer doesn't have a power, but I have not heard any cases of it growing back a limb. So you can pray all
and
you want.
And you're not going to. See, here's the thing.
And that's the thing. So how do we make an excuse? Is it an excuse that we're making when something else happens from it?
It's not an excuse. It's not an excuse. It's a matter of belief, and it is a matter of faith. And the question is, do you believe in, where do you place your faith?
We have to
because
define the
word. I grew up. I don't go to church now because I'm not a religious person, but I am a spiritual person, and I was raised in the church. And I definitely do believe in God. I do believe in prayer. I do believe in Jesus Christ. However, I also believe in the natural. So like you were saying, prayer is not going to, if I cut off my limb, I can have the utmost prayer and I can have the utmost faith, but that limb is not going to grow back, right? However, I do believe in a power higher than myself. I cannot say this is what that power looks like. This is where that power mm-hmm. is. So it's a matter of how strong your belief and your faith is. And this is another thing that divides us.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, we
got
to define those. You have to define,
well,
like, okay, what is belief?
Do we really have to define it?
And you don't got to go to the dictionary. I'm just, because that would be like cheating, because, you know, we use the words all the time.
No. What I'm saying is, if I just say,
let me play ignorant, and I'll say, okay, well, I'm not really sure. I speak a different language. What does believe mean again? Could you give me the definition of belief? So this makes it more clear between the both of us, and then we'll do that for faith as well. So what is belief? Like, what would you say belief is? Like, and then we'll look at the factual definition of it.
Okay, so my definition and my understanding of belief is what I accept to be true from my knowledge.
Okay. All right.
Right?
And
from my knowledge, from my experience, what I accept to be true, that is what I believe.
Okay,
so
now.
I can say that I believe in God.
Okay.
Because that's what I accept. I can say that I believe in Jesus because that's what I accept. I can say, you know, even in material things, I believe in doing a certain thing. I believe in living a certain way because that is my personal acceptance. And here's the difference between someone like me who is a spiritual person, but I am not a religious person. I do not believe in organized religion. I absolutely don't, because these are sectors that divide what should be brought together. And to me, it's the equivalent of the racism that we talk about. We segregate ourselves according to our beliefs. So if someone chooses to believe in Christianity, if someone chooses to believe in Muslim, if somebody chooses to believe that they are a Buddhist, what makes any of these three people different? Bottom line is they choose to believe.
It's not for me to dictate
what they believe in. Whatever they choose to believe in is up to them. That is their belief. I honor it and I respect what your belief is.
Okay,
and I'm not
now,
going to change my belief based upon what somebody else says, what somebody else, you know, it's written here.
Fact?
I don't care.
Fact is not going to make you change your belief. A fact will not make you change it.
Not the facts. According to whom?
No, a fact. A fact is not according to anyone. A fact is a fact. The sky is blue. That's a fact. Water, you know, you look at water, it's clear.
Now, let me stop you right there. You said the sky is blue. That's a fact. Is it a fact or is it an optical illusion? Because you get so far into the atmosphere and it's no longer blue, it's black.
No, all I'm saying is this, is that If you have a basic normal vision, because colorblind person or somebody different thing, of course, is going to see it different. You know, if you look at it in the daytime, it appears to look blue, because you're right. At nighttime, it really is clear, and it is, you know, giving a reflection. At nighttime, you see the clarity of it, and it is black, really like a dark blue-black.
Right, it's a blue-black.
Now. All right, let's take something better that can't be argued with. There's stars in the sky at night. So there's light. You know, so somebody can argue and say, oh, that's a light. But the fact is there. Now, that's a fact. It's a fact that if you cut off your arm, it will not grow back. Now, that is a fact. You see, so a fact
that
is not
a fact.
Belief, and it is not what I think or what I'm trying to impose on you. So that's the problem with the world. It's not that our beliefs separate us. Is that people don't want to change that belief for the truth. Like you said, you believe what you believe to be true. Now, what you believe to be, you accept what you believe to be true. That doesn't mean that what you're accepting is true, because it's what you believe to be true. So now, how do we grow when we do not want to accept the truth, the fact? No,
because
there is no,
what we have to understand.
No, wait, recall when I said. You can't grow.
All right. Yes, we can.
If I say I don't want to know your, I don't want to try to accept your views. I want to hear them. I want to entertain mm-hmm. them. But in the end, I'm still going to believe what I want to believe. Then I can't grow from this. But me calling in and saying, you know what? Let me see what this woman has to say. She said a few things that do make sense. And there's going to be mm-hmm. some stuff that are going to be factual. And the only way mm-hmm. for me to really grow is to change what I believe right now. I have to leave that behind so I could become who I'm going to be. To say, you know what?
I don't think you have to change your beliefs. And it goes back to what I was saying, what my father taught me, what I have taught my children, mm-hmm. is you never know how much you don't know until you learn something you didn't know. You will always, as long as your mind and your heart is open to it, you will always be in a position to learn something that you did not know, right? Yeah. Now, whether you choose to believe that or not, that is up to you.
No, the belief, again,
but
when we
you
look
still,
at that word.
You may not believe it. You may not accept.
I think accept
but you
is
have
the word.
Grown. You have still grown. Even if you reject it, you have still grown because the thought that there could be another truth has entered your mind. And once that thought is there, it's always going to be there, whether you're conscious
of
it or not.
It's always going to be there. The real thought is to say what I thought might be wrong, and that might be the truth. Because there's not two truths. There's one truth. So it's not that, there's something else and I'm just going to accept my truth. No, what you think is true might not be true. And that's where the real growth comes from. Just like when we talked about the Africa and the genetics, it's like, how can somebody grow if they're like, it did come from Africa. The scientists said it come from Africa. This would come from, they can't grow. They must be able to entertain that thought of maybe I could be wrong about what I think and what I believe.
Exactly.
I don't believe anything. I do not believe anything because I know the word comes from to wish, if you trace it back.
But
it's an Anglo-Saxon word meaning to wish, to leave. Now, when you say, I wish this would happen, and you look at it in that context, you start to say, yeah, you know what? When people say they'll pray for me, I tell them, well, I'll think for you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I know prayer has an energy, but the thing is that it devoids the person of thinking. To say, I'll believe instead of thinking. Now, I don't believe anything. I either think or I know. So if I don't know it,
I hate to cut you off right there, but we got like 90 seconds, and my time is up for tonight. I definitely would love to have you back. I'm on the air every Tuesday at 6:30. We can definitely. I would love to continue this conversation because you have brought so many fascinating facts out, and I would really like to continue. But if you can join again next Tuesday, that would be awesome. If not, I want to thank you so much for your time. Fans, Dushin, I'm sorry that we didn't get to the people that I was hoping to talk to tonight, but we'll save that for another day. Food for thought. The only constant in life is that things are always going to change. Everybody have a great week, and I will talk to you soon. Good night.